when I tell people running saved my life, I think of that specific night where there was no rhyme or reason. I just literally threw on a pair of sneakers, and I think I had on cargo shorts and a t-shirt, and I just ran out, and I'm like, well, I'll see what happens. And it's gone for about an hour. And like I said, back then, it wasn't a lot. I didn't know how fast I was running. I didn't know sometimes how far I was running. I was just doing it, and it became a part of my life.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My friend Sierra Carter sent me a note saying, "Hey, I had this guy named Ryan Petty on my podcast. He has a great story. I think he'd be a good one for your podcast too." So I contacted Ryan, said, "Thank you, Sierra." And contacted Ryan and said, "Hey, I got this message from Sierra. Would you like to be on my podcast?" Ryan said, "Sure." And I told him that most of the time, you know, I tend to know a little bit about my guests before they come on the podcast, but I really have tried to make this like a virtual trail run. And so when you run trails, if you show up at the parking lot and there's a group run, you kind of divide up and decide who you're going to run with. Sometimes you run with people, you know, that you may not know. And so you have conversations, getting to know each other as you go out on the trail. Sometimes even if you know the people, you end up saying, you know, the conversations that you have on the trail, you find out things about people that you know, you wouldn't have found out any other way than going out on a trail run. So that is kind of what I want to have the spirit of this podcast to be. So I told Ryan, "Hey, you know, just don't give me any information about who you are. I'm not going to listen to Sarah. I'm not going to listen to Sierra's podcast. I'm not going to look you up on social media. Let's just turn on the microphones and we'll see what happens." So that was the result. And I'm happy with the way our conversation went. Ryan has got a great story, and I enjoyed taking this time to do a virtual run with him and have a conversation about his running adventures. So I hope you enjoy joining along in this virtual trail run as I talk with Ryan Petty. Well, tell me about how did Sierra find you?
It was crazy. She just put a poll up on her Instagram and asked if anybody wanted to come on and do a podcast about their most recent race. And I had just run a 6-miler about 3 weeks prior. And I was like, it's funny because I listen to a lot of running podcasts, and the first question is, "So how'd you get started running?" And every time I hear that question, I'm like, how would I ever answer that? Like, I just, I'm a mail carrier for the postal service. So I'm out on the road 7 hours a day. So all I do is listen to podcasts. So,
okay.
I was just like, I never imagined I would have the opportunity to like be interviewed by somebody, you know, I'm just a regular guy, you know? And then I clicked yes on that poll and I was like, I'm never going to hear anything back. I thought maybe she'd like, I told her, I was like, I figured you'd probably look at like my social media and see, like, I don't post anything very often. I have no followers. Like, why, how could I benefit? And I wasn't thinking that she was like, just in it for clicks, but I know that's a big part of podcasting is, you know, getting people to follow, to subscribe to your podcast, you know? So it was right. Like, but out of nowhere, I got an email. I'm like, oh my God, this is real. Like, this is actually going to happen. And then I had told her, I had just listen to her on your podcast, like literally like the day before I talked to her, 2 days before I talked, I think it came out that same day. And I learned so much more about her and I was just fascinated, like, cause I lived all over the country. I lived in like 7 or 8 different states. So when I heard her story about just packing up and moving to Utah, I was like, I could relate so well, because I can't tell you how many times I just loaded up a car and just left somewhere, you know, to go somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, and that's really is unusual, because people, I mean, like we talked about, she and I talked about, people get stuck. I mean, there's people, in fact, I met somebody just last week. I mean, I live in Kansas City, so it's not a huge town, but, you know, it's 35 miles to the other side. I live on the west side, and the east side,
right.
And you can, you know, there's places that you're still really kind of in the city, and I've driven 40 miles to get to.
So, yeah.
You know, I talked to somebody, and it was like last Wednesday, and she goes, oh, I've never been over on this side of town. you know, she's like in her 40s. I don't know. It's hard for me to judge age, but.
Well, I'm from a small town here in New Jersey called Point Pleasant, right on the shore. My mom and dad are from here. They went to high school here. I went to the same schools they did. I had the same teachers they did. And all I ever wanted to do was leave here. Like, I was just like, yeah. I just want to go. And then I did. And then I wound up back here 20 years later. So, but yeah, that I meet so many people. Yeah, I meet so many people like in my travels who have never left their hometown. And I don't know if it was you guys or someone else I was listening to. They were talking about, there's just some people, they get out of school, they get married, they raise a family. And some of them never, like, I know people in my town that live in their parents' house, like that I went to high school with. They live in their parents' house now. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I couldn't imagine that.
Well, that does happen, but yeah, it just, and you know, there's people that, yeah, that just not getting even to the other side of town was, you know, in a city.
It's bizarre.
That seems bizarre to me. And
I lived out in LA for 4 years in the San Fernando Valley. And that's that same type of situation, because that city, I mean, people say LA, it encompasses a massive area. And it's just like, it's like that. It could take you an hour to get to the other side of the valley, and it's a whole nother experience. But
people stay kind of to their neighborhoods, and they're the same familiar things and get but yeah. I try not to get in a rut. That's something I really try not to do.
Well, that's one of the downfalls of being a mail carrier, is I've been on the same route for 5 years now. Mm-hmm. And it's, you're going to the same houses, the same mailbox, you're walking the same steps every single day. And every time a route opens up and I think about bidding on a different route, I'm like, I just can't do like the same route for so long. But then I think of all these like we just went to a friend of mine who I met, became my friend because I was their mailman. We just went to one of their daughter's chorus concert, you know, elementary school concert. So like I've formed these relationships and these bonds, and I tell my wife, like, I'd miss people on my route too much to go to a different route, you know, but people are like, oh, it's great, it's something different every day. I'm like, no, it's not. It's the same thing every day. I'm in the same spot at the same house at every time and every day. So that part is like, you know, other than the weather changing, it's all pretty much the same.
Well, and there is a lot to be said about community. I mean, that's a big, big part. I mean, my wife has been talking about, why don't we move to Texas? She has this thing for Texas for some reason. Yeah. She likes Utah too. So we might end up next door to Sierra.
That's funny.
I've got connections here, are the people that I know, and that would be that'd be a consideration to have to leave, because
absolutely.
Community is a big deal.
It is. And that's why, you know, between living in my hometown now and being a part of the community, that's why I fell in love with ultra running, was because of the community. And then the recovery community is a whole nother community. The recovery community and the ultra community have very, I don't want to say similar, they have a lot of overlapping members, I guess you could say, of one community and the other.
You know, I've talked to some people who have been in recovery, and you know, ultra running has kind of become the thing that they do. And in fact, some of them kind of talk about ultra running as if they've substituted one habit for another.
Well, that's how I got into running, essentially, is it became a new addiction. Exercise and running became a new addiction. And
it's something that it gives you, you know, a lot of, there's a lot of advantages for even for people who are, you know, haven't had been through recovery. You know, there is this thing, this draw. It's like, I get kind of twitchy if I don't run. You know?
Yeah, I feel the same way. And I just actually took, I had to take all of last week off. I took off Monday through Friday from running because I've been battling plantar fasciitis for about 4 weeks now. And with my job, I'm walking 9 or 10 miles a day. So I needed it. But I just told my friend, I was like driving home from work on Thursday and there was people out running over the bridge coming back to my house. And I was like, I had this envious and jealous feeling in me. Like, I want to be doing that. But I have to convince myself I really shouldn't right now because I really need to let this rest up.
Yeah. Yeah. So walking that far a day, how do you rest? How do you get any of that kind of recovery from them?
I ice and that's about it. And it's been a battle. Like I just did 6 this morning and once it gets warmed up, like hit about a mile and a half and I don't feel any pain, but 2 hours after I'm done, it's like, oh God, it's back. Just like, will it ever go away? I don't know. And you know, I've read everything online. Everyone's like, you need to go to physio. And I'm like, I just don't have the time. Like, I don't. And I'm known for running through injuries. Like, just, I've had runner's knee, Achilles tendonitis, this plantar fasciitis. I had a real bad groin problem for a while. And I keep going because I go crazy if I don't.
Yeah. You know? Well, there's a doctor in my running group and she told me to do heel drops. She told me to stand on stairs, with my toes and then lower my heels, you know, lower my heels down and go up. My grandson told me to do a towel with he called it toe yoga. He said, just take a towel and scrunch your toes to kind of pull the towel up, you know, wad the towel up with your toes.
In your toes. Yeah.
Yeah. Because my wife has been having, you know, something similar to plantar fasciitis, but it's actually on the side of her leg. My grandson's a physical therapist. And so he said, do this toe yoga.
All right. I'll have to give that a shot.
The thing that helped me, I mean, wasn't doing toe yoga. I was doing heel drops, but, you know, they said put ice on it. I put a dish pan and put water in it and ice cubes. And so I actually soaked my foot in ice water.
Submerged it.
Submerged it. And that really seemed to help with the pain, especially because I'd still go out and run.
Of course.
Come back and stick my feet in ice.
Yeah. And then complain that my wife's like, if it hurts so bad, why don't you not run? I'm like, well, you know.
Well, I didn't complain about it. I just like, okay, you know, just gonna, I don't think anybody knew about it while I had it. But I did talk to my running group. I was like, you know, what are you doing for plantar fasciitis? So I did kind of a poll of to try to get something done with it.
Yeah, I just go online and look up and I'm like, I should be doing this. I should be doing that. I should be doing that. But I'll just go out and do whatever.
So you said you started running. Did you have the goal of running an ultra marathon when you started? Or did you kind of like no. do a little bit at a time and kind of get sucked in?
I started running in 05. Yeah, 05 I started running. I was 28 years old. I weighed just over 300 pounds.
Wow.
And I was like, I got to do something about this. I was at that point, I was still about 2 months away. I was still in active addiction. And I decided, all right, I got to lose weight. That was the first thing I thought. And I was like, okay. So that was when the Atkins was like the big trend. I'm like, I could do that. Eat nothing but protein. Like, yeah, I could
precursor
do that.
Keto diet.
Keto, yeah.
And but I mean Atkins was different. It was just protein and
it was all and I was in the restaurant business at that time. So all I ate was hamburgers, turkey burgers, bacon, and eggs. And I decided, all right, like the only thing I could drink is vodka and soda water because there's the least amount of sugar and the least amount of calories. So yeah, so and then 2:14:05, I wrecked my car in a blackout and got arrested for a DUI. And that's eventually when I got sober. And then I was living in LA and I went on a hike up in Topanga Canyon just to get out. And I was like, oh, this is beautiful. I just fell in love with the nature and being outdoors again. And excuse me. I remember coming downhill and I, you know, started picking up the pace a little bit. I didn't plan on running, but I was just kind of jogging down the hill and I just took off. And I grew up as a really diehard skier and I hadn't skied probably in 10 years because of the lifestyle I was living. And running downhill on a trail just reminded me so much of skiing, where you have to look ahead, look down, be aware of your surroundings, the whole nine yards. And at that time I had lost probably like, in 2 months, I probably dropped like 25 pounds. It was like, just from that diet alone, I was like, mm-hmm. wow, imagine I added exercise to this. And then from there, just became all out, join a gym, go running every day. It became, again, my obsession. I became obsessed with under eating and over exercising, because for someone who was overweight, it really just, at that point in my life, I wasn't thinking about health or longevity. I was just thinking I want to get as light as possible. So it was just exercise. To touch on that, I didn't even run my first real race until 2019. All that running I did. And it was all, I had, there was no music. I had no iPod. I don't even know if there was iPods in 05. I'm not sure, but I had nothing. I would just go out on the trails and I logged my mileage just by following trail signs. If I, you know, it said this intersection is 3 miles. I would run that intersection and it said, go this way to this intersection is 2 miles. And I would turn around and come back. I was like, oh, I ran 10 miles. Mm-hmm. And then for road running, and I was still doing this up until about 4 years ago, from this house, I would get in my car and I would just drive. And I'm like, okay, that's 6 miles, turn around and come back. So I knew the mileage just by driving. I know where mile one was, mile two, mile three, mile four, and then so on and so forth. And then that's how I logged all my miles. Like, it was, I was just thinking about it the other day. I follow this guy, Andrew Glaze on Instagram. He's an ultra runner and a firefighter out in California. He's on something like his 150th week of consecutive 100-mile weeks.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I look back, when I look back to like my late 20s and early 30s, I'm like, there was times where I was probably not even knowing it running, because I didn't log anything. I did nothing. I just went out and ran and that was it. I think about it so much now when I run, because I have all these goals, right? Like, these training blocks, I'm training for this. And back then it was just, I don't want to sound cliche, but it was just because I loved it. Like, I still mm-hmm. love it, but it was just different. It was lose weight and run and be in the mountains. It was the Santa Monica Mountains, the San Bernardino Mountains. And yeah, it was just, and it's grown so much. And then when I ran my first 50K, basically on a whim with the guy who I was telling you about, whose daughter we went and see, I went and he's like, I want to run an ultra marathon. I'm like, all right, let's run an ultra marathon.
Did you know what an ultra marathon was that at the time?
No, because I ran a half marathon in April of 19. And that summer I told Andy, I was like, I'm going to run a marathon. You want to run a marathon with me? He's like, oh, anyone can run a marathon. I want to run an ultra marathon. I'm like, well, what's that? And he's like, anything over a marathon. I'm like, oh, okay. So he found this 50K and we signed up for it. And that was January 2nd of 2020. We went out and ran this 50K up in Watchung, New Jersey. And it was just God awful.
That sounds cold. I like winter running, but I mean, it'd be a cold one.
Probably about 40 degrees, foggy and misty. Didn't see the sun all day. It was five laps and change. The loops were like 6 miles and change. So it was five loops. Mud over your ankles, water up to your shins, rugged. But I finished it and I beat him, which was the best part. Cause after the third lap, I was ready to quit. I was like, I'm done. I was like, my back hurts. I was like, I'm tired. I'm cold. He's like, we're not going home and telling everybody we couldn't finish. He's like, you're finishing this race. He's an ex-Marine. So he's like, I don't care what it takes. You're finishing. So I gutted out and I think it was like 8.5 hours, which in retrospect, like now that I've gotten more involved with running and what's out there, I'm like, that was god awful. Cause I put it in perspective, about a year later, I ran a 50 miler out in PA, 50 miler with 5,000 feet of vert. And I ran it in just over 10 hours.
Wow. So that's pretty good.
I added all those miles, all that vert, and only 90 or 100 minutes of time. So, but yeah.
Well, what were the conditions? I mean, were they dry?
That was a very warm day. It was in March. It was dry. It was warm. I had bought a pair of the New Balance Hero 7s, and I bought the Gore-Tex because I was training all through the winter, and they were great. And I was like, you never know what it's going to be like in March. I wore those shoes out there. Luckily, I brought a pair of – they were actually road shoes, but I wound up having to take them off because they were heavy. They're heavier than a pair of regular shoes because of the Gore-Tex, and my feet were on fire. Just sweating so bad because it was like 65 degrees in the middle of March. And it was a perfect day. It was absolutely perfect. But yeah, it was just like, but the thing that got me hooked was I realized if I put my mind to something and I put in the work and I put in the effort, I can succeed. And I worked my tail off for it, you know? So that was just like, and then it was like, okay, what's next?
Right? Yeah. Yeah, that's often the progression.
Yeah. And that's how I had my mindset on 100, which I'm running in April. I ran New York Marathon back in 21. So not this previous one, the one before. And that was a rough race because I had COVID. Let's see, that race was November 6th. I got COVID the first week of September.
Okay.
And,
that's a pretty quick turnaround. Yeah.
Yeah. It crushed me too. Like I was bad. I was a smoker for many, many years. I just quit probably 10 years ago. And so I think that really had a negative effect on getting that sickness. Mm-hmm. And I went out there and ran it. It took me like almost 4.5 hours, but I came home and I told everybody, if you want to feel like you're somebody, run New York. Because I felt, even the last couple miles when I could barely lift my legs, I was so exhausted. I just felt like a pro out there. The crowd was unbelievable. It was one of the greatest feelings I've ever had, was running that race. It was spectacular.
Yeah, I've heard that's just really good. Really good energy there.
Oh man, it was bonkers. It was so much fun. Like DJs and bands and just everybody out there with plates of candy, plates of food, like drinks, like people just on their front porch. It was really amazing. And then again, it's not an ultra, but it's the running community in general and just people mm-hmm. coming out to support you. It was just spectacular. It was really amazing.
Yeah, that is something I've heard, just the kind of atmosphere that's there. And I've heard it's similar at Boston, some of those big races, the people, the city really supports.
Yeah, yeah. It's spectacular. It's a good time.
Yeah. So, so you're working on your 100 mile. Do you have a group of people that you run with? You said it's a small town. do you have other people who are out in the woods with you?
Nope. I should say no up until about 2 weeks ago. I'm kind of an introvert, although I love people. It's kind of like this real, I don't know if double negative is the right term, but
most introverts I know are, they're social, but they also is like, okay, now I've had enough. I need to go be by myself. And that's
exactly.
That's kind of the sound.
Yeah. And for me at work, all day I'm talking with people all day long. And then running was always that great escape for me. When I was in active addiction, you know, I was alone. I had nothing. I had nobody. It was just me and my drugs and my alcohol. So that kind of, I guess, gets instilled in you, that loner type behavior. And I've always just loved running because it was a solo effort, right? And mm-hmm. So about 3 months ago, we have a local running club called Jersey Shore Running Club. So I signed up, you know, paid my dues, joined the club, and they post all their group runs. I still haven't been to one yet. but I convinced this friend of mine I met through work, one of my customers, and convinced him to sign up. Well, he says he's signing up, he's training, but he still hasn't signed up yet. I said, I still need to see that screenshot from Ultra Sign Up that you're in. He's like, you're going to get it. I'm like, all right. But he's been wanting to get out on the trails. So I took him up north. So this was the first time probably ever that I ran with somebody. Mm-hmm. And now, mind you, I've only known my friend Dan for, I don't know, a couple years. And never hung out with him. I just see him at his house when he's not at work. I see him mm-hmm. at his house, his wife, his kids, blah, blah, blah. So we get in the car to drive. I said, this is the ultimate test. I got to spend 2 hours in the car with somebody and then run with them that I know, but I don't know. And we had a blast, man. He had so much fun. He was so grateful to me for introducing him to, because he had never been, this was like legit trails, you know, single track, roots, rocks, up, down, the whole nine yards. And he had never run anything like that. And he's like, man, that was so much fun. So it was a really great experience. And then we went on a local run close to town here. And it's just a 5 mile gravel road around a reservoir. And there's a couple little offshoots where you could add a couple miles. So we did 7 miles. And I remember finishing that. And I was like, we're done already. I just ran 7 miles. And then that's when it hit me, the benefit of running with a group or with somebody. We talked the whole time. Mm-hmm. We just BS'd. And what's the podcast I listen to? Trail Runner Nation. And they put their podcast on as if it's a trail run. They're like, welcome to mm-hmm. the trailhead. We're going to head out today, blah, blah. And that's what it felt like. And that was like the fastest mental 7 miles I ever covered in my life. So yeah, but no, I do all my training by myself. And when I was training for that 50 mile race, I had just started to really educate myself on running as far as low heart rate training, zone 2 training. That's when I first heard of the 80-20 method, so to say, Jack Daniels mm-hmm. method, 80% mm-hmm. easy. And when I was training for that 50, I know why I was battling injuries, because I was just going out every day and running as hard as I could for 10 or 15 miles. I'm like, that's what you got to do. Like, if you want to run 50 miles, you got to go out and run a lot of miles and you got to run them fast. But I've learned over the course of the past few years, that's not how it's done. So yeah, training has changed a lot. I've thought about getting a coach. I still haven't got one. I was signed up for 100K on this past September 10th. Again, signed up for 100K. Training was going great all summer, working my butt off. 4 weeks out, I get COVID again.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, second time in less than a year. And took it easy. I went out to the race, got about 3 miles in, and I was like, nope, not going to happen. So I grabbed my first official DNF that day, got lost trying to get back to the start line. So I had some guy driving by. I had to flag him down, and luckily he was going. So the 50K started like 2 hours later. So he was on his way to the start line for the 50K. So he gave me a lift back to the start line. And yeah, I felt really good going into that race until I got sick too. Training went great. I had really high hopes, but it didn't work out. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's tough, tough to feel sick. I was signed up for 100K and I got COVID like 2 weeks before, and, I had a very mild case of COVID, but, it was just I was still tired enough that I just it was actually the day of my quarantine ended was the day I needed to travel. And I called the race directors and said, yeah, this is not probably a good idea for me to come being that close.
I knew it wasn't a good idea, but I figured I had to drive out to Pennsylvania and camp overnight. And I drove out there. I didn't sleep at all. I got up and I had just, I promised my wife, I said, if I don't feel right, I won't push myself. Like, you know, but I have to go. Like, I have to like put the effort in the driving out there and giving it a shot. But I said I would be very attentive to what my body was telling me. And my body told me, you're not going to make it. Like, you're not going to make it 10 miles, let alone 60.
Well, that's a good thing to keep aware of too. I mean, I've had a couple of DNFs that just, well, one was because of heat and, yeah, you know, just, I kept going slower and slower. And, well, the heat took out most of them. I think 50 out of 50 starters, only 11 finished. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really brutal. So, I didn't feel bad about, you know, saying, no, I'm done, because I just couldn't go any faster.
And it was hard in the moment, but on the drive home, I was grateful that I made that decision. You know, it was the right decision, and I've learned not to beat myself up over anything. And, you know, my outlook on running and fitness now is more about living better towards the end of my life. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to do what I'm doing now, you know, when I'm 60 and when I'm 70 years old. So not dying is key.
that's always a good plan.
Right. Not sustaining constant injuries, which I do battle with, but eating well and just being generally healthy is, I have a different outlook on why I live the way I live now. And it's, mm-hmm. I always tell people, like, I'm not doing this and living my lifestyle to be 100 years old. I'm doing it to be active as long as possible. You know, my grandmother is 92 now, and I don't want to say she's incapacitated, but, you know, I've seen a lot of 92-year-olds in a lot better shape, but she really just didn't take care of herself, you mm-hmm. know, from 70 on, and kind of just let herself go. And it's sad, you know, I don't want to be in that position if I'm ever that age, you know. So it's more long-term thoughts. And when I came back to New Jersey here to be with my now wife, almost 9 years ago, up till then, everything I did, I didn't think about consequences. Backcountry skiing, backpacking, climbing, like mountain biking. I didn't think of, it was just me and my dogs at that time. So mm-hmm. you get in a position in life now where you have, when I say family, I mean her, two dogs and a cat. That's my family. But I put them before myself. And I think that's one of the biggest changes I've made mentally and emotionally over the past 9 years is that not putting myself before everybody else. And it's hard as someone who only cared about himself for most of his life. It's, you know, it's a lot of work to do that, but I think running helps with that. I think talking to people helps with that, being part of good communities, whether it's your town, a running community, any kind of activity, I think is just key to helping me think about other people and trying to put them before myself, which, you know, like I said, it's a hard task sometimes, but I mm-hmm. really try. And running has, I always tell people running saved my life, because one of those times when I was living in LA, I'd only been sober for about 3 or 4 months. I was sitting in my little studio apartment and I was just in a bad way. And I was like, what am I going to do? It's like 9:30 at night. I'm just like, I didn't want to drink, but I needed to get out of my head. And I remember I just threw on a pair of sneakers and ran out the front door, and I just ran down the road, and I kept running and running and running. When I got back, I was tired. I laid down and fell asleep. And if I didn't do that, I don't know what would have happened that night. Mm-hmm. So when I tell people running saved my life, I think of that specific night where there was no rhyme or reason. I just literally threw on a pair of sneakers, and I think I had on cargo shorts and a t-shirt, and I just just ran out, and I'm like, well, I'll see what happens. And it's gone for about an hour. And like I said, back then I wasn't lying. I didn't know how fast I was running. I didn't know sometimes how far I was running. I was just doing it, and it became a part of my life. And then over these past 17, 18 years, I often tell people running has been a love-hate relationship sometimes, because I get these niggles and I get in these spots in my head where I'm like, I don't need to do this. I don't want to do this. And then, you know, you force yourself to do it, you feel better, and it just goes back and forth, back and forth. And luckily, once the pandemic hit, I think a lot of people realized, like, you know, I don't know what it was like where you're at, but here it was, you can't do anything. So a lot of people started running, you know, and then, and then that for me just kind of really got me back into it again, like hardcore. So, and that's where I've really started to enjoy racing, enjoy going and picking up my bib and someone handing you a medal at the end of it. It's just rewarding, you know. And I grew up in athletics. I played soccer. I laugh all the time. When my friend got married back in 19, and it was about a month before this half marathon in Asbury Park that I was running, and my soccer coach from high school was at the wedding. And I was telling him I was running a half marathon. I think it was like 2 or 3 days later. And he's like, "You're running?" I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "I couldn't get you to run down the field." I was like, "That's why I played goalkeeper in high school soccer, just because I hated running so much." I was like, and then
that happens to a lot of people.
Yeah.
In sports, in high school, they say, you know, running is the punishment. I mean, like, if you mess up, you go run. Yeah, you gotta go run.
You got to run laps if you do something wrong. And I hear so many runners who come from athletics who didn't like it when they were younger because they always saw it as that punishment. And now people like me and you, we go out there and punish ourselves on purpose.
So when you're training, do you ever get those glimpses of the times when you were just out there running and not calculating your miles and just out there for doing it?
Yes, I do. And it happens a lot in the rain. And I say that only because when it's raining, I tend to leave my phone and my earbuds in the car. So to me, that brings me, quote, back to the roots, right, of what it was like. And so to be out there with nothing in your ears, just hearing in the rain, for some reason, when you're out on the trail and you hear the rain hitting the leaves on the trees and the ground and you're running through the puddles, it just makes me feel even closer to the earth and reminds me of why I do this. You know, that's why when I was a child, I loved skiing so much. I just love being out there on the snow. Like, I just, when you're sliding down a hill with sticks on your feet and you think to yourself, I even think about it when I'm running or even just walking, like, this is the earth I'm on, right? Like, when you're on the actual ground, like sitting here in my living room, you know, my feet are on the floor. My feet aren't on the earth. And I think when I'm running and I can get in that place where you see the deer, you see the squirrels, you hear the birds. So it's really huge for me sometimes to just take the technology away and leave it behind. And I try and do that with my my wrist device often too, but I still find that one really hard to detach from.
So do you watch the wrist device to is that something that you have to, when you have it, does it distract you, like you kind of drop into the training mode of like, how am I doing, heart rate?
It can, yeah, it can. And it's more so these days with heart rate, not so much time, because I'm really focused on heart rate training when I'm doing these buildups to races. Because I've just learned how important it is to run slow. And that's another hard thing. I remember when I first heard about low heart rate training a couple years ago, I remember going out on a run and trying to keep it like 120 to 125. And I would be so embarrassed when people drove by me because I was running so slow. And I'm like, I wanted to wear a sign on my back that said, I am low heart rate training. Because it just, but that's the ego. And that's another part of the human experience that could be so detrimental, is your ego. So now that I've gained much more knowledge about the science of running, now when I'm running at a slow pace to keep my heart rate down and I see people zooming by me, I'm like, you're doing it wrong. You're running too fast. Yeah, but yeah. The technology could be, it's just, I mean, on my days off, I leave my phone at home, I try and detach from it as much as possible, because I go out at my job. I mean, I'm walking down streets and I'm watching people do 35 miles an hour down a residential street and they're all staring down, so I just see the dangers of it in my daily life. And every light, I do it all the time. I pull up to a light and I look to my right, someone's staring at the phone. I look to my left, someone's staring at their phone. And it's so, yeah, the technology's everywhere. But when it comes to getting out there, especially on the trails, it really does help to just leave it behind and just detach from it.
Yeah. Yeah. And during life too. I mean, it's one of those things I kind of have determined I don't want to have anything, mastering me, not being, making my own decisions about it. Just people, they can't leave their phones and just set it down and look at the world around them.
No, I live with one of them. My wife, she's very attached to her phone, but she is a teacher, so she does use it for a lot of work, but, I just like to leave it behind. And when we go out together, I leave it on the counter and go about my business. Don't even need to bring it with me. I'm just turned 46 last week. So, I grew up in the era where the highlight of my day was coming home to see if anyone left a message on the answering machine. That was like the greatest thing in the world. If you got home and a friend called you and they left a message, it was like, all right. And, now it's just like, but again, I love it, because if I have a question about anything, I could just type it into the little computer that I carry around with me and I could get an answer to anything. And as far as running and training goes, it's just a game changer. I mean, I can learn anything I need to on that phone. I mean,
yeah,
it's a computer in your pocket. There's no other way to look at it.
Yeah. And that's the great thing about it is, I mean, I track my runs that way with that. I've got, everything's on Strava. But I have tried to back off from being driven by the numbers I have a friend who is, that's like, that's the numbers are important to him. And I'm like, just chill.
When I signed up for the 100K, it's called the Boulderfield 100K. It's out in Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania. And I was like, all right, I'm not going to get a coach, but I think I'm going to look into a training plan and give myself something to follow. Give me something, see what someone with more knowledge suggests I do. So I went to Ultra Running Magazine, and if you signed up for the magazine, you get access to their training programs. And they had programs for beginner, intermediate, and advanced. So I got a beginner 100K because I'd never run 100K. So obviously I'm a beginner in my eyes. I print it out and I look at it. There's nothing for the next 4 months about mileage. And I was flabbergasted. It was time. It was all timed, mm-hmm. right? 2 minute intervals, 3 minutes rest. And then when you got into your long runs, it was 2 hour run, 3 hour run. And it was all time. And I'm like, wow, that's fascinating. Like I had never even imagined that it wasn't about the mileage. It was about the time. Mm-hmm. And that really changed my outlook on, especially on the mileage aspect of my training, where it was always like, I have to run this many miles. I have to run this many miles a week. I have to run this many a month. And then when I got onto this training program, it was just like, I don't know, it made it for someone like me, it was a little easier to wrap my mind around instead of seeing like on a back-to-back long run on a Saturday and Sunday, seeing 25 miles and 20 miles, right? It mm-hmm. was 2 hours and an hour and a half. And then as you progress, it was like a 4 hour run, then a 3 hour run. But when I took the mileage out of it, I was able to wrap my mind around it a little more. And that made a huge difference. So a lot of times now I just really focus on getting out there and being on my feet for a set amount of time, as opposed to logging a certain amount of miles.
Yeah. And that's, you know, for people who run, everybody runs at a different pace. And so that is a great way to look at it, is because, you know, if you think about somebody who is slow, that 20 miles might be, you know, 6 hours.
Right. Exactly.
and that's, and for somebody else, I mean, that just could be three. So yeah, that makes a big, and so you, one person could be undertraining, one person could be overtraining just mileage. Yeah.
And that was something a term I had never heard of either, was called overtraining. I just didn't think there was such a thing as that. And then when I got my first case of an Achilles problem, I found this term called overtraining, and I was like, read about it. I was like, yeah, that's what I'm doing. You know, like, because there was, and at that point I was run streaking. I got turned on to that mm-hmm. by a friend, an old friend of mine from the Coast Guard, his sister, who's a runner. She challenged me to do this streak. I think it was one of those from like Memorial Day, the July 4th of July or something, one of those short ones. Uh-huh. And I hadn't, again, something I'd never heard of, but I was like, yeah, a mile a day. I'm in the middle of a training block. Sounds good. So got out there and logging my miles, and I wound up going almost a year, but that's when I learned my body, my body can't do that. I need days off. It felt great. It made me feel super committed, super dedicated. No matter what, I got out there every day. But then the injuries, I don't want to say injuries because they were never any, it was just hurts. They call them niggles. I've heard that term before, niggles. Mm-hmm. And they just started to stack up on each other. And yeah, I was like, this isn't for me. And I've even tried it since. I'll go out and I'll run 4, 5, 6 days in a row, but I hit 6 or 7 and my body's just screaming like, take a break, take a break.
Yeah. There are people who do well with it. And I know several runners that are in my circles, and you know, they've got, you know, several year streaks going on. And
yeah, my friend Jamie's 1200 days, almost above 1200, between 1200 and 13 days. So I don't know what the math would be on. It's gotta be 3-4 years, I think, but now sitting here right now, I couldn't imagine that, you know.
I can't remember the episode. I talked to a man who, he was 36 year run streak, and he had some thing, I think that he had an end to it because he had some health problems that were unrelated to running. It works. I mean, if you do it right, you've got to be careful. It puts a different, what you talked about the injuries. I think the people who do run streaks are much more aware of the what they do to their body. And so they when they're out there for their rest days, and they're doing their miles slow enough that they don't that it really is a rest for them.
But it's just it's hard, but I enjoy my rest days. Strength training has become a huge part for me of this progression of running. I was always into the gym, but I never, 3 years ago, I'd go to the gym a couple days a week, just to do some light lifting and stuff. And then I really started to learn again how important, like I always said, I don't need to do legs. I run, that's my leg workout. Everyone's like, no, dude, you have to do leg day. Like you can't, runners need strong legs, strong core. And, so now it's strength training. I've learned a lot about cross training, getting on the stationary bike. I'm hoping to get a road bike here soon so I can incorporate some cycling into my training. Cause that's something when I was into mountain biking, it was just a great outlet of exercise that I enjoyed a lot. Obviously not a lot of mountains where I live here, 2 miles from the ocean. But I always thought cycling was something I could get into. And again, thinking about long-term, like if my body does start to kind of break down a little bit more than I plan, I think cycling is a good outlet for runners if they can't run anymore. I know a lot of people have gone to cycling in their 50s and 60s, and I know cyclists in their 70s are still out there locking some long rides. So, but yeah, it's just something, I start to think about other ways to get in. I know the Europeans, they're into the cross country skiing and ski touring, which is really big over there for their rest days. They'll go out and cross country ski for like 20 or 30 miles, which again is a low heart rate activity. It's all aerobic and it's still building that core that you need to go to run far, And I think for me, I think what I really loved about getting in the ultra running was, I'm a bigger runner at 6'2" and 195 pounds. I'm never going to be a speed demon, as I've always said. Well, maybe I could just run further than a lot of people. So I think that's another aspect of the ultra distance that I like is it's a huge physical and mental challenge. Yes, there's cutoffs and yes, there's certain places you have to be at a certain time, but you don't need that, as an average Joe or an average age grouper, I don't need that 6-7 minute pace, Right. I mean, what the Desert Solstice just happened yesterday or the day before, and Camille Herron went out there and ran a 7:30 pace for 100 miles. That's flabbergasting. Granted, it's on a track, but still, to run 100 miles at a 7:30 pace is unbelievable. And she's, I believe she's over 40 now. So again, that puts it in perspective. If you take care of yourself and do the right things, this is an activity, if you want to call it that, a sport that you can do, well into your 50s and 60s if you do it right, and that means, taking care of yourself, taking rest days and doing all the extra little things that help, and it's a struggle to do all those extra little things sometimes, but you just gotta, for me, it's just, I hear the word consistency so much in running and it's just consistency. And I try and be as consistent as I can. I get out there 5-6 days a week. If I'm tired, I run less. If I feel great, I run more. And I think that's the best way to go about it for me anyway.
Yeah, that's always a good plan. And that's one of the things that people who follow a training plan oftentimes don't do is they're kind of, again, committed to the numbers. And so, if the numbers say they're supposed to do, and there's a time for that, but there's also times when, your body's not feeling it. And, if the numbers are your king, or your boss, then you're going to end up, you really doing things you shouldn't probably.
Yeah. I hear a lot about that. I'm not on Strava. You know, I wear a Garmin. All my Garmin data obviously is on my phone, but I also have a calendar where I write everything down. Very, very old school. You know, I put how my pace, my average heart rate, the time, where I was, how I felt on a scale of 1 to 10. And I hear a lot of people say, you know, Strava is great, but it's also people feel obligated to put up certain numbers on there. So again, I don't know if there's likes on Strava, but they want people to see like, oh my God, look what he's doing or she's doing. And they kind of are run by that. And I try now, again, I'm not a very active on the internet. So I'll put a poll up on Instagram. Where do you listen to your new music? Apple, Spotify, or are you a dinosaur and use Pandora? I was like, yep, that's me. Pandora all day. Podcasts on Spotify, but when it comes to music, I'm on Pandora. And, you know, I was very late, you know, living the way I lived up until I got sober. Like, I never even had a phone, let alone a cell phone, you know? So, like, I'm still very dinosaurish in my ways. And to be run, like we were talking about earlier, by the device or by Strava, like, it has its detriments. But it's also great because you could, from what I hear, you go on there and you can look at pros who are on Strava and you can see what they're doing and, you know, kind of get an eye and see like, oh, how are the pros training or how are they doing this? Whereas for me, I listen to podcasts and I listen to a lot of professional runners and they're very open about what they do and how they do it. And the more I've listened, the more I've learned, the fastest guys out there on the trails in these 100-mile races, they're all running easy miles, man. They're all running easy. And it's just like, Killian's out there running easy, doing lots of cross training. And so I'm just trying to incorporate all these things I hear into my training. So again, I have no grand expectations. Like, my goal going into the 100-mile race, the Jersey Devil 100, my goal is under 24. It's a 30-hour cutoff, I believe. It's out and back with only 936 feet of elevation, so super, super flat. And I'll go out there with a reasonable goal, and I'm sure once I'm out there, I'll get a little ahead of myself. But, you know, I'm really looking forward to this experience. I've been intrigued by this distance for a couple years now, and when I finished that 50-miler, I remember when I finished that half marathon in 2019, I crossed the finish line. I said to my wife, I can never go another 13 miles. Like, I couldn't even fathom it. Like, another 13 miles. When I finished the 50, I was like, I think I could go another 50. It won't be as quick, but I think I could do it. And yeah, again, it just becomes an obsession. People like me with this obsession behavior, it could be bad. It could be good, but yeah, I'm looking forward to the experience, the challenge, and just getting out there and leaving it all out there. And I know if I do the work and I stay consistent and I stay dedicated, that, you know, I could cross the finish line and get me one of those little belt buckles.
Yeah. Belt buckles are cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even wear belts, but, you know, it'd be nice to have one.
Well, you have to buy a belt. And I've seen, yeah. I was at the start of the runners meeting, and there were runners there wearing their buckles with their running shorts. I mean, they had a belt and running shorts and the t-shirt. I mean, it's like the belt was totally out of place, but, you know, they had their buckle, and they, you know, it's like, it was, you know, showing people that
you got it. You know, I mean, if you earned it, you might as well show it. Right?
If you earned it, you might as well show it. Yeah. Yes. So, do you have any races that you like, a goal race or a dream race or a destination race, Ryan?
Definitely Leadville. I lived in Leadville for about a year. Lived in Leadville in 2012. And, at that time, again, I told you, I'd never heard of ultras till a few years ago. I worked in a restaurant, so I remember race weekend for the 100. It was just crazy. Like, the whole buildup in that town is for that race. Like, I know firsthand what a business, how a business depends on the Leadville 100 series. When that race comes to town, that town is bonkers. And having been at the top of Mount Elbert, Mount Massive, I spent many nights camping at Hope Pass. That's my ultimate bucket list would be Leadville. And I'd like to say Western States, but Leadville, I almost feel like they're both so, I don't want to say typical, but for me, Leadville would be great. Just again, having lived there, I spent a few years in Colorado. I lived in Leadville. I lived in a little town. The Ouray 100 would be fun too, because I lived in Ouray. I love that area. My wife is truly, truly in love with the ocean. She could never live in a landlocked state. So going back to Colorado is definitely out of the question. But, you know, I was my sister and my niece and my nephew live out there. I was just out there towards the end of the summer and got some good hiking and running in Summit County. So I just love that area, and to go back there and to be able to participate in the Leadville 100, especially now that I've learned more about like the trail legacy and everything that's involved with it. It's really crazy to have lived there and know nothing about it. And then, you know, all these years later to realize what, you know, the race director, what that town does for fundraising and charity work and that whole race brings is just, I don't know. I just love to be a part of it. So that's the ultimate, is to get into that lottery. And every year I say I'm throwing my name in there. I still don't know exactly how it works, but one day I hope it'll happen.
Yeah. I've known some people who've run Leadville, and they say it's a pretty challenging race. So
yeah, I mean, I've hiked to Hope Pass from Twin Lakes many a times. I've probably done half a dozen overnight trips up there. And I know walking up that trail is tough. And, but a lot of people tell me that I've heard that race, that a lot of people say the actual course is very underwhelming as far as the course goes. And I think from what I gather, I'm not a huge out and back fan. I like big loops. I'd rather run one big loop, but, you know, people say it's underwhelming, but I think Leadville is kind of just it's like the Rose Bowl, right? Like I went to the Rose Bowl one year to watch Oregon and Wisconsin play. And I tell you what, man, you're in that old stadium with metal bleachers and there's 110,000 people in there. And it is just, it's magical. And I think that's what Leadville would be like for me, especially having been a part of that community for, you know, about a year I spent there before I went on my way to another town in Colorado. Like I said, I would often just pack up and travel on. But that's the ultimate bucket list. And I want to run New York again. I'd love to run New York every year. I ran New York in 21 for a charity called DKMS, which does research on blood cancer, and they're a bone marrow donor. Mm-hmm. You can apply through DKMS to be a bone marrow donor. My dad passed away from multiple myeloma. So that was a huge race for me. I raised almost $4,000 for DKMS to run that race. And I think for me, that's even what made it more special is the cause I was doing it for. You know, they reached out to me because I'm on the donor list, and they sent me an email. I don't want to say me. They sent many, 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 many people emails, and they only picked 10 people. And I was one of the fortunate ones to be picked. And to have run that race for that cause and have that experience was spectacular. And I was supposed to run it this year. I was going to run with a team called Team for Kids, which is another charity. I don't want to. Let's just say I was unable to. to run New York this year, I guess is the easiest way to put it. But hopefully if some regulations change for the upcoming year, I could get on a team again and run New York. I mean, I'd run New York every year if it was possible. It's just, it's that magical. I mean, the whole experience is just.
So now you're making me think that I need to spend more time on the roads and make a trip to New York to run.
I do probably right now. I'm probably 60% trail, 40% road. Cause you know, sometimes I get home from work or if it's early in the morning, I just head out my front door, you know, run up to the beach, mm-hmm. couple laps on the boardwalk and run home. So, and I think that's also for someone like me, the variety really helps too. You know, it's hard for me to find the time to travel, you know, an hour and a half to get somewhere to go run. So sometimes it's just throw on the shoes and run out the front door and see where the morning takes you.
Yeah. But, that's the advantage of road running is you can just head out your front door. You don't have to drive to the trails.
Yeah. And you know, when I lived in Colorado and I lived up in Big Bear Lake in California and I lived 8 houses from the trailhead right into the national forest up in Big Bear, California. So that was literally run out your door and have thousands and thousands of miles of trails right out your back door. Like, yeah,
I would love that. That would be great.
It's pretty awesome.
Well, Ryan, thank you a lot for taking time to talk to me. You said you don't do much on social media. Oftentimes, usually I'll end by asking people asking how people can connect with you, but.
I am on Instagram, GF Skier, on Instagram, and my name Ryan Petty on Facebook. My wife posts a lot of stuff and tags me in it on Facebook, so you can find some pictures of me on there. But like I told Sierra, and I'll tell you, you know, once this is released, I'll put it up. You know, I'll post it on Instagram and on my. I'm active in quite a few running groups on Facebook, mm-hmm. so. Definitely stuff goes up there more often than just my regular page because all my running stuff that I post to Facebook, I post to the running groups because I don't think, you know, again, back to the whole social media thing, like I really don't think just people who are friends with me on Facebook want to see that I ran 8 miles and blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, if I'll put milestones on Instagram, like I'll post like, you know, I think I posted my 50 miler on there and maybe New York. I don't know. But again, that's just the way I am. Just very like, you know, yeah, just the whole social media thing. Sometimes if you're not doing it for business or for me, when I think of social media, I think of very look at me, Louie, you know, like, look mm-hmm. what I did. Like, mm-hmm. you should be interested in what I did. And then I'm like, nobody really cares what I did. And, you know, that's why the running groups for me are huge on Facebook because I know those people they want to hear about running and they want to know what you're up to. And I have a lot of friends across this country on running pages. So it's good to keep in touch with them that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing I like about it. Social media is you do get to connect with some people that you may not, you know, see in real life. And,
yeah.
So,
that's, I mean, I have people on social media on the Run Streak Facebook page, one in Colorado, her and her husband. And they tell me, hey, if you're ever here, come on over, you know, I have people all throughout and I've never met them. Mm-hmm. We just see each other posting on Facebook all the time. And, hey, if you're ever in town, let me know, you know? And it's like, yeah, that's awesome, dude. Like, that's really, that again, that's one of the great benefits of the little computer in our pocket.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. There's a lot of advantages, but there's also a downside for people. It can become out of control.
Yes, for sure.
But thank you again, Ryan. I appreciate it. And
thanks for having me.
I will connect with you on Facebook and Instagram and see how you're running this.
Absolutely. Hey, it was a pleasure to meet you, Eric. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ultra Marathon Mindset Podcast. I do enjoy being able to spend time with you here each week. I appreciate you taking the time to listen. The show notes for this episode and others are at ultramindsetpodcast.run. You can find this week's guest there. More information, links to their social media and website. There's also a podcast player there if you want to share this episode with somebody who does not normally listen to podcasts and doesn't have a podcast player on their phone. You can also find links there for my Amazon affiliate link.
Crush Your Goals course, a short course I made to help you get your goals in order. Also, you can schedule a chat with me. I have my online calendar is there. All of these links are at the sidebar if you're on a laptop, or you have to scroll clear to the bottom if you are on a phone. If you did enjoy this episode and you do know somebody who might like it, take just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. Remember that an ultramarathon mindset is about more than just running. You need a strong mindset for success no matter what your goal in life. And developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Thank you again for listening. I'll see you next time.